2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today we take a look again at the book of Revelation. This is the second in our multi-part series. Probably 4 weeks we'll do it. And just a bit of reintroduction, if you will. Last week we talked a bit about the timing of the book of Revelation, when it was probably written. And I mentioned that it was probably written somewhere between, about 68 and the early 70s of the first century AD. In fairness, I should say why I believe that. Because if you go, for example, to the brand new commentary and new translation of the Book of Revelation put up by Brigham Young University, two gentlemen who I have incredibly high respect for, Professors Richard Draper and Michael Rhodes, are the authors, and they take the position that it was written in the last decade of the first century. Here's the reason why I think it was written in the late 60s, early 70s, somewhere in that range. If, as Latter-day Saints, we take seriously the statements that this book of Revelation was written by the Apostle John, then we have to also say, how old was John? If Jesus was born somewhere between 6 BC, which is my belief, or approximately in the meridian of time, and at about 30 AD, at the very latest, maybe a few years earlier, if he was born in 6 BC, if he had his ministry start then, he called his apostles when he was about age 30, and John could not have been much younger than Jesus. Maybe 20 at the earliest. Maybe he's 10 years younger than Jesus, born in approximately 10 AD. If that were true, and I don't see how he could have been born much later than that, that would mean that when John wrote the book of Revelation, if he did it in the mid to late 60s to the early 70s AD, he was in his 50s to 60s, somewhere in that range. If you believe that he wrote it in 94, 95, 98 AD, you would have to believe that John, at the age of 85, approaching 90, wrote the book of Revelation. That is a hard one for me to believe. People live to greater age now than they did in those times. They have better nutrition, better health care in general. And so the possibility that someone could write such a work with the inspiration of an angel today seems greater than at that time period. That is the reason that I favor the earlier date. I could be wrong, but that seems sense to me, make sense to me. Plus, you have very specific references, it seems to me, to the Emperor Nero's reign. You have the 666 reference, which is, to me, clear numerology that represents Nero Caesar. That's what those numbers seem to mean, the numbers of his name. With that little background about the dating, let me say that this is a book in chapter 1, verse 1, that says the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him. That was likely the first title of this book. It was probably not originally called the Book of Revelation or referenced St. John the Divine as it does now. It was probably originally called the Revelation of Jesus Christ. And then from there, you have the sort of the subtitle or the general description of it, which God gave unto him, Jesus, to show unto his servants. And then you have in verse 1, what's he showing them? Things which must shortly come to pass. Now, that statement leads many to say, oh, everything in the book of Revelation happened during the first century or so, and so you can't look to the future. This is just all first century stuff. Well, the problem with that position is that when you go to the beginning of chapter 4 of Revelation, at the end of verse 1 of chapter 4 of the book of Revelation, it says, the angel says, I will show thee things which must be hereafter. So chapters 1, 2, and 3, things shortly to pass, meaning very soon. Starting with chapter 4, things that must happen hereafter without specificity as to how far into the future they will be. And that lack of specificity led to all kinds of unsupported suppositions and beliefs, which in many ways is tragic, but that's what happened nonetheless. So, chapter 1, verse 1, shortly to come to pass. Well, what was to shortly come to pass? Verse 9 tells us, in part, that it was tribulation. Talks about tribulation. There are references to tribulation and persecution in the church all over the place. In chapter 1, verse 4, John is talking to the seven churches which are in Asia. Question becomes, why would he talk to seven churches in Asia? Why not Thessalonica or Rome or the other places that Paul sent his letters to? Well, perhaps they needed the specific guidance and help right then. Perhaps the kinds of tribulation they were going through, the persecution, was difficult, and they particularly needed the help. And then when we get to what I find one of the most fascinating verses in all of the book of Revelation, verse 6 of chapter 1, we read this, and hath made us kings, this is talking about Jesus, Jesus hath made us kings and priests unto God and his Father. To him be glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. Joseph Smith had two different ideas about this. When he did his first edit of the work that we now call the Joseph Smith translation, Joseph changed this to say that this was a reference to God, meaning Jesus, and his Father, meaning Elohim. But then later on, towards the end of his life, shortly before he had the occasion to give us the King Follett Discourse and some others, he made references to the idea that God himself had a Father. And the Father of Jesus went through an earth life, or a life much like we did, and worked out his own salvation, and so shall we. And so he changed his mind with more light knowledge and said about verse 6 of Revelation that this reference is to Elohim and his Father, which is fascinating. And you see tidbits of those kinds of beliefs in early Christian writings. Particularly outstanding might be the hymn, If We Could Hide a Kolob. If we could hide a kolob in the twinkling of an eye, and it talks about, and pass by the gods and get to the beginning of the gods. It's a clear reference as you read through that first verse, through the idea that Jesus has a God who is Elohim, Elohim has a God, has a Father who's also a God, and so forth. So the idea of Father, Son, Father, Son, Father, Son goes on and on and on. And that's an idea that at least in part comes from Revelation chapter 1, verse 6. And then we move on to the specific seven churches, which we will do when we come back from our short little break. We're talking about the book of Revelation. This is part two. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
We return to Religion Today with Martin Tanner on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. If you have a question or comment about this program or any other program, feel free to send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com, martinstanner@gmail.com. And I would also invite you to go on a cruise to Book of Mormon lands with me this next April of 2020. If you'd like to consider doing that, we'd just like information from which you can decide if it's right for you. Give Cruise Lady a call or go to cruiselady.com or send me an email and I'll get you the information about that. martinstanner@gmail.com would be the place to get in touch with me, or call Cruise Lady, LDS Adventure Tours in the Salt Lake Valley. And also, you could go to cruiselady.com. Some wonderful LDS tours done by some great LDS scholars, of which I'm humbled to be a small part here. Okay, back to the Book of Revelation, Part 2. Let's take a look at the churches that are the recipients of this wonderful work that we now call the Book of Revelation. And I'm going to skip over the rest of chapter 1, because after verse 11, where it lists the seven churches, it kind of talks about candlesticks and different things, and those are either very easy to understand, or there's a reference, like in verse 20, to what they really mean. Some ask, why seven churches? Because there were certainly more than that. Well, the word seven during this time period would be sort of a complete number. Today, we would have, hey, top 10 lists on the radio, or you might be listening to late night TV and see a list of the top 10, whatever. So 10 is a good round number for our era. Back then, 7 would have been a round number. So these seven churches are meant to be representative of all of the churches existing at that time. Why did John not choose to write to Corinth or Laodicea or Rome or some of the others that Paul wrote to? Well, maybe he wanted to give special comfort to these specific churches in Asia Minor, which we would now describe as Turkey. That seems to be a logical assumption to me, but I don't know. I'm not a mind reader, and especially of the Apostle John. Chapter 2, the angel is telling John, giving him a revelation, and he's talking first about the church at Ephesus. This is a wonderful little series of verses, because he establishes a pattern, which is, I know you, which would give great comfort, and I understand the great things about you. And then he lists them. In this case, the church at Ephesus. He says, I know your works, I know your labor, I know your patience, and I know how you weren't fooled, basically, by the people who claimed to be apostles and weren't. You found them liars, so they were able to discern people who lied. Chapter 2, verse 2. And then we go on a little bit farther, and the revelation changes in tone. Verse 5, remember, therefore, from whence thou art fallen, and repent, and do the first works, or else I will come unto thee quickly and will remove thy candlestick out of its place. The candlestick here is a reference to a place in heaven. This is a metaphor for keep your place in heaven. It's like a beautiful golden candlestick. And then verse 6 is something that's sort of troubling to some, because they say, well, who are these Nicolaitans? But remember this thou hast, that thou hatest the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate. Chapter 4, verse 6, Nicolaitans. Who were they? They are referenced in a number of places, also in verse 15 here of chapter 2 of Revelation, but you can find them described in Acts chapter 6, verse 5, as those who had forsaken true Christian doctrine. In the Great Early Christian Work Against Heresies, book 1, chapter 26, verse 3, Hippolytus confirms that assessment, or has a similar assessment. He says that there was a guy named Nicholas who left the correct doctrine and had a different doctrine as part of Christianity. What did he do? Well, we know from other sources that he essentially separated from his wife, who was held to be extremely beautiful. And I guess both he and his wife were okay with this, but he said, I want to be sharing, and anybody who likes her should be able to enjoy her like I have, if you know what I mean. So a really bad guy and a really bad idea of how Christianity ought to be. That is why those who were part of the church in Ephesus, who John is talking to, hated the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which were involved in that activity, and why Jesus himself says in verse 6, which I also hate. He hates them too. That is a bad, bad thing. And then in chapter 2, in verse 8, we have the angel now talking to the church in Smyrna. And he says this, these things which the first said and the last which was dead and which is life. Clear reference to Jesus. He goes on and says, he knows about your works and tribulations and poverty. They must have had real poverty and problems of being poor. And then he goes on and talks about them being persecuted by the synagogue of Satan. There must have been some really, really difficult persecutions for the church in Smyrna by the local Jewish community there. Verse 10, fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that ye may be tried. Now notice it's not because they've done something wrong. The devil is casting them into prison, where they shall have tribulation 10 days. But be faithful unto death, and you will be given a crown of life. This is a clear reference to some of the persecutions that were under, that the early Christians were under during the time of the Emperor Nero. In 64 AD, the account is that Nero wanted more land to build a great structure in his honor. He couldn't arrange to acquire the property by appropriate means, so he clandestinely had Rome burned in that area. The whole city didn't burn, but a lot of it burned. The fire got out of control. This was a horrible thing. So he blamed it on the Christians. And this seems to be a reference to what was to happen to them. They were killed. They were burned alive. Many of them were crucified alive. They were dipped in oil and put on a cross and lit on fire, as human torches up and down roads. Nero, a very, very bad guy, horrible man, terrible man. And with that, we're about out of time for this segment. When we start our next in our multi-part series on the Book of Revelation, we will be talking about the church in Pergamos. Fascinating church, great message, great message. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today on KSL.